once I had a secret love that lived within the heart of me. All too soon, my secret love became impatient to be free. So I told a friendly star the way that dreamers often do, just how wonderful you are and why I'm so in love with you.
Good morning. Welcome to the Roundtable for this Monday, the 13th of May. It's 13 minutes past 9 o'clock, listening to the music of Doris Day. We just learned a few moments ago that Doris Day passed away at the age of 97. An American actress whose screen presence stood for a time of innocence in 1960s films. She was not only known for her acting and singing, but also through her charitable work in the Doris Day Animal Foundation that confirmed her legacy. She starred as Calamity Jane in the 1953 film and was surrounded by close friends after contracting a serious case of pneumonia after being in excellent health for her age until recently. She was known for her honey voice, and as for being an actress whose dramas, musicals, and comedies made her a top star in the 50s and 60s, among the most popular screen actresses in history, and we'll be listening to her music this morning. But Doris Day passed away, a Hollywood legend, at the age of 97.
Best song, Tennessee Waltz.
Good stuff. Well, it's so that is sad, but we will remember her this morning. Let me introduce everybody to you, and then we'll get started and talk about other news that is in the news. We want to welcome Libby Post to the program. She is a political consultant and our good friend, and good morning.
Good morning.
Nice to have you here.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Sarah Rogerson joins us as well. She is an Albany Law School professor who directs the Immigration Law Clinic. Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning.
And Jim Hendler is here. He is the Tetherless World Professor of Computer, Web, and Cognitive Sciences of RPI. Good morning, sir.
Morning.
Very nice to have you here. And WAMC's Alan Chartok. Good morning, Alan.
It's a very important day, Joe, I know, because you're my partner in this, that you understand it, too. Today is the day we open the locked box, or the lock box, and with what is going on in this world and the fact that so many people listen to this station now, over 500,000 every month, individual people, it's extraordinary. And there's a reason for that, because this is the come-to place where you hear it all. It is so serious that if you want to do something, we've been very lucky to be able to call our fund drives in a day, or a day in a morning. And the reason for that, and that that's so important, is not braggadocio. It is really that it sends a message to others that this is where we are in a very, very difficult time. The stock markets are down over 500 points this morning, and there's a reason for that, because we have a guy who is approaching his dealings with the Chinese the way he dealt with businesses. and we know now.
And how well he did that.
And we know how that did. He messed that up. And this is getting messed up, too. American farmers are going to get hurt very, very badly here, as are people who are going to pay about $1,000 extra that they didn't have. So the purpose of that ramble is everybody, 1-800-323-9262. 1-800-323-9262, and say, yeah, Alan, I get it. I want to put something in the lockbox because we can't afford not to have this station here. Or go to WAMC.org.
WAMC.org. We have just under $100,000 in the lockbox, and we're looking to get half of that money.
Need $400,000.
Yeah. before, and it's only 2 weeks away, 2 weeks till the fund drive.
Is that
starts
right?
on June 3rd. So,
whoa.
TikTok. We have a lot of work to do, and we'll make the best of it here. But
we
have a lot of work to do. So, WAMC.org, 1-800-323-9262, 1-800-323-9262, and we will get started on that. Okay. Let us begin and talk about what is happening in the news, and we begin with the deal on well, I guess there are no deals, are there? As far as the trade war that is going on, and what is currently happening. The latest news that broke just a bit ago is that China will raise tariffs and is retaliating against the U.S. with tariffs of its own. They say they're raising tariffs on a wide range of American goods to 20% or 25% from 10%. The move was the first in retaliation over President Trump's tariff increase last week on Chinese goods. This just broke about 7 minutes ago. Beijing's retaliation comes at a time when many in China feel that the United States has behaved high-handedly in threatening tariffs. Mutual trust and respect are the essence in handling the negotiations, according to a Beijing economics professor. President Trump on Friday raised tariffs on $200 billion a year worth of Chinese goods, particularly auto parts, to 25% from 10%. He had already imposed 25% tariffs last summer on another $50 billion a year in Chinese goods, including a wide range of products that his administration view as strategic, from cars to aircraft parts and nuclear reactor components. The Trump administration says they have more tariffs planned. The Office of the United States Trade Representative said that on Monday it will issue for public comment in Mr. Trump's direction a proposal to raise tariffs on essentially all remaining imports from China, which are valued at approximately $300 billion. And as Alan mentioned just a moment ago, that the Dow futures, well, I guess it was you, Jim, that were saying that the Dow futures are
very
down.
Low.
Yeah, so we expect a rocky day on Wall Street. Who would like to?
But I only have one thing to say, and it's not nearly as important. I just got a note saying, whoops, Alan, Patty Page did Tennessee Waltz.
Whoops.
So much for that.
All right. Okay. Patty Page.
Well, I mean, he's just reckless. It's like he doesn't know what he's doing. I think everybody, not everybody, but I think many people can recognize that he really doesn't have a firm grasp on economics and how the world's economy works and how interdependent we are. And you know, his talk tough of, I'm going to take care of China, I'm going to take care of the immigrants, and leave it to me, I know what I'm doing, is still resonating with his base. But ultimately, they're the ones who are really, I mean, I think all of us will be hurt, but they're really going to be hurt because, you know what? Food's going to get a lot more expensive now.
Libby, do you remember when we as kids used to, well, I was way before you, but used to play a game called Battleship.
Yeah.
And
I even played that one.
An old
People
set under the under the TV table.
Still play Battleship. Well, Trump is sitting there saying, I got more battleships.
Yeah.
I have more battleships than they do, and therefore on paper, I'll win this. They'll lose. But he forgets that the whole idea of a very strong Chinese president is I am up to taking on the Americans.
That's
here,
right.
And
yeah.
I can do that.
They've just been waiting for that opportunity. They build it for decades. And the where we're going to find it is right in our pocketbooks. Clothing, basic everyday goods are
1,000 bucks.
Yeah.
Is it 700 and something? Is the average going to be the average?
2,300 was the latest number I heard. For the newest round. So the average per person for in the U.S. will be $2,300
per person. Per person, not per household. Per person.
That's a good question.
Well, average is an interesting concept.
And also, that's the problem, of course.
There's some people who have a lot more money, and therefore they'll be paying a lot more, and they won't care.
And there are some people with a lot less money who have a lot more kids.
Who have a lot more at stake. Yes.
Right, who are a lot more at stake.
And I'm not convinced that the people who have a lot of money and ability to pay don't care. It impacts their purchasing power more broadly if they run companies, if they have industries that are built on the pillars of this trade war. It has much broader implications than just, you know, a pair of blue jeans.
As always, you make great sense.
Thanks, Alan.
So what do you think we where do you think we go from? I mean, is this just going to be, as Alan indicates, a game of going back and forth? Or is there going to be a point where, because we do know that there are some Republican lawmakers that are upset.
Some.
But are there enough?
Well, you know, the crazy thing is, it's very unclear to me. So I just spent a week down in D.C. and I was in a bunch of different things. And there's so much dysfunction in the agencies. Everyone's talking about it now. And basically the problem is Trump makes these decisions and then he wakes up a week later with changes his mind. So it's making it really hard for them to plan anything, to figure out what the strategies are going to be. They were planning against these tariffs going into effect, but then they, you know, when they go into effect, what, how much, whether they're going to stay, what happens when China does this. I mean, you know, everyone is just sort of, so I'm hanging out with people who I would call middle right, and they're confused. They want to back the Republican side, but they're just saying, you know, there's like a government that's just waiting in craziness. So it's a really government by chaos theory.
Well, you know, he did pull back the last time he got into one of these messes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he saw the economy sliding. He saw people getting really ticked off. And so he pulled out. He pulled back. If your stock market is down 1,000 points, it's going to be down 1,000. It's 500 today, and we all knew we got wrecked, you know, last week. There are going to be people who have a lot of money in the market. Most of the bottom half of this country doesn't have a lot in the market. And therefore, he's going to be having people yelling at him.
We hope.
Yeah, we hope, because, you know, there are some people who are the uber rich, the 1%, the ones who, yeah, this will impact.
You mean the 1% of the 1%?
The 1% of the 1%. This will impact them. They will not feel it. But they are benefiting from his deregulation, his desire for monopoly capitalism. You know, so you'll hear it from small business, medium-sized business. But the 1% of the 1% will keep rallying because, you know, those are the kinds of people who make money when the market tanks. Let's not forget Joe Kennedy made his fortune when the market tanked.
Well, that's hardly everybody, Libby.
I know, but there are a lot of people who make money when the market tanks.
Yeah, well,
and,
that's true.
And they know how to manipulate this whole process. And, you know, the thing is that Trump has always reveled in debt. He loves debt. He has said it. And he's driving us into it, and he doesn't understand the consequences.
All right. Let's move on to some other stuff before we go to a break at the top of – or at the bottom of the hour, rather. And we welcome your letters, of course, panel@wamc.org.
Joe, one more thing on this thing.
Yes.
The Chinese are not in a position – Trump is assuming, if he believes them, that they will pull back. They're not in a position to do that. They can't do that. The entire sense of powerfulness on the part of the Chinese would be disturbed. You have a president who's just appointed himself in China, president for life. They're not about to succumb to, you know, a sort of cheap trick on the part of this president. They won't be able to do that. So I think it's going to be prolonged.
There's this article in the Washington Post this morning talking about the president's go-it-alone approach, not just on trade, but on immigration as well, and many other issues, and the economic risks that it poses. And it's interesting because they talk about how he's moved dramatically to pull free of Congress in recent weeks by slapping these huge trade penalties on China, as well as directing the construction of a wall along the Mexico border, looking to solve issues that dog Democrats and the Republicans for decades in a way that could help his reelection bid. The risky move marks Trump's attempt to deliver on two of his core campaign promises in the face of a Democratic House and a muted GOP opposition in the Senate, as he seeks to cast himself as a defiant chief executive willing to act alone, no matter the global repercussions. That's scary when you don't think there are going to be repercussions for anything you do, and if there are, then you don't care.
Right. Well, and it's both. And if there are, and you think that you can spin it fast enough to distract your base and a significant percentage of the undecided.
So Lindsey Graham in this article says the president is extremely comfortable in the job, more comfortable than he's ever been. He feels he's gotten the rhythm. Of what?
Yeah.
Well, the rhythm of he's perceiving himself as being successful, and he's not alone. I read a piece in the paper this week about a guy who has never, ever called an election wrong. And he's saying Trump's going to win. He can win another time. Let's face it. If he continues to have the economy on his side, and if he continues to, and if the Democrats shoot themselves in the foot, whatever, there's a very good chance that he'll win again. We all know it. I have a wife who says, let's pick out a place to go.
But also in this article, and I think it's interesting because, I mean, we touched on it in just in our conversation this morning, but this I alone can fix it indicates that maybe he's fixing something. But if there isn't anything being fixed and it is causing more problems.
Well, usually he breaks it first.
Yeah. Right.
And then he fixes it. And then he gives himself credit for fixing the thing.
Well, not
that
even
broke.
Fixing it, but just backing off of what he was originally right. going to do. The break broke it, right? And it still remains in the fragile condition that it was before he "quote unquote" fixed it.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. There are still families being separated at the border. It's just, you know, trade wars have taken over the headlines. So he hasn't had to say that he's fixing that in a while, although I know we'll talk about it later, but there are record numbers of people in detention. They're building jails faster than ever. They can't build them fast enough to hold the numbers of people that we're holding now down at the border. So, you know, it just depends on the issue of the day and what he thinks he can get the most press out of at any given time, and then how he can manipulate that into making himself look like the big chief.
We have less than a minute, but also the idea of how you start off saying I'm a great deal maker and I'm going to make deals and I'm going to work and I'm going to make great deals, and then to then say, well, I don't need to work with anybody because I can do it all by myself.
Right. I mean, that seems like what he's been doing the whole time, though. I remember listening to Michael Cohen's testimony about how for his whole life. Professional career, people have both wanted to be near him and have been deeply afraid of him and unable to predict what he's going to do for a very long time.
Barbara Perry, a presidential historian at the University of Virginia, says he just carries forward with what he wants to do. The Constitution be damned, the institutional guardrails be damned, professional guardrails be damned, and the leaders of his own party be damned. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org.
When I was just a little girl, I asked my mother, what will I be? Will I be pretty? Will I be rich? Here's what she said to me. Que sera, sera. Whatever will be. The future's not ours to see. Que sera, sera. What will be when I grew up and fell in love. I asked my sweetheart what lies ahead.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. Playing Doris Day this morning, the legendary actress and singer died earlier today at the age of 97. So we're remembering her this morning. We welcome you back to the Roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Jim Henler, Sarah Rogerson, and Libby Post making up the group this morning. And again, we welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. And also, just a reminder that the lockbox is now open. We need all the help we can get. The fund drive begins on June 3rd, not that far away. And all we need is you. So,
could I add to that?
Yes.
When you say we so profoundly, the we doesn't mean all we need right here sitting in this room or sitting in this building. The we is everybody who's made this radio station what it is. That's everybody.
Now, so I also made a mathematical error earlier, and I said it was 2 weeks away. It's 3 weeks away.
Okay, that's fine.
Yeah. So it's
still very close.
A week is the 20th. 2 weeks is Memorial Day. Week after that is the fund drive. So we have 3 weeks to make $500,000.
That's right. And in order to do that, and you said 400,000 before, in order to do that.
400,000, yeah. We have 100,000 in now, like 98.
Five. In order to do that, you'd have to make $100,000 a week. Now, or more,
130. Yeah.
But when you think about that, that is that's a lot of money. But we frequently make over $100,000 in a day a fund drive, so it's doable. But that means everybody's got to just get off their yes, 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 and say, okay, we're in it. This is our station. We made it. Let's keep it.
WAMC.org. You can also give us a call, 1-800-323-9262. All right, let's go to letters.
Okay, Joe. Rich says, tariffs. China government controls all. Forget tariffs. They can slowly shut down imports from U.S., especially commodities, and buy from other countries. Here, prices will go up and inflation will rise, interest rates rise, and recession. And that's from Rich and Amherst. I love Amherst, by the way, and therefore love Rich. But it's an interesting concept. And that is, when you're dealing in a democracy, even a democracy where Trump seems to be, you know, trying to control everything, it's very different than if you're in a dictatorship. And his point is, in China, government controls all. Forget tariffs. They can slowly shut down imports from the U.S., especially commodities, and buy from other countries. Well, that's true.
Well, and also China is going with a new policy, which is really trying to an internationalization, very much what we did and when we were building our economy, was to reach out to the first with the countries near us, and then we went over to Europe. They are basically now taking over all of Southeast Asia. They've been moving into the African markets. They've been moving into
Absolutely.
The South American markets. And what we've been doing is moving out of those markets to a large extent because of this isolationist move on our part. And so it's an interesting time because our big international companies need to grow in exactly the markets that we're losing. And so some of them have not been so happy with some of these policies. So as Libby says, it's a very complex, interlinked economy.
Right.
And, of course, you should ask these questions again on Friday when the economist is
right.
here.
Right, but it's like he doesn't, you know, either he's hearing from the scions of industry to say, don't do this, and he doesn't care, or he's not hearing from them. You know, one would think that the people who are being, you know, the multinationals that are based in the United States who do business in those markets and want to stay in those markets, there would be a human cry. And I know Kudlow sort of hit him upside the head over the weekend on the shows, but
I guess it depends on who they are. I mean, I was just reading an article in the Times Union about the ports and how the ports in Albany have been pretty hard hit by the previous rounds of tariffs in 2017, 2018, earlier last year. And if you think about where the ports are located, I mean, it's all across upstate New York.
Mm-hmm.
It's all across the Eastern Seaboard. These aren't places where he's that concerned about jobs and votes.
Well, I mean, in New York, no. But you've got plenty of ports down in the southern part of the country, you know, that are very, very active. And those people, one would think.
I mean, automobile manufacturers, too.
Yeah, there's a whole network. I mean, people don't realize. I used to do work for the Port of Albany. There's a whole network of ports in upstate New York. You know, there's one in Oswego. There's one in Albany. There's one down in Queens, which is a private port. And they're economic development drivers. There's no two ways about it. Commodities come in, they get unloaded. This port here, the Port of Albany, specializes in project cargo and heavy lift, turbines, things like that, where not every port can handle something like that.
Subway cars, apparently, for Massachusetts public transportation.
Yeah. Anything that's really large and takes a specialty and special equipment, they can do in Albany, at the Port of Albany. And Rensselaer, I should say.
So Jay Sam wrote, Hi, Alan, please don't go anywhere. If Trump gets reelected, we will need you more than ever. But don't forget that all these people in their protest boats are not going to take a chance this time. And I don't think Jay Sam meant boats. I think he meant votes. All their protest votes aren't going to take a chance this time. All the ones that voted for Jill will not make the same mistake twice. That's interesting.
Or Bernie. We'll see about that.
I hope so.
Well, let's see. Fox News reports that Trump's got the U.S. economy booming. They go on and on. Oh, look, here's one that does mention the tariffs. It's way down on the bottom of the paper page, and it says that that China has announced that they are setting tariffs on the U.S. It does say, if you read the article somewhere in there,
and Mexico will pay for it.
No. He said China would pay for the tariffs.
Don't forget.
Because they would take the losses to keep our market. Strangely enough, they haven't done that.
Well, I hope Jay Sam is right. That's all I got to say. Trump in the market. Every time Trump tweets, he moves the market. I would like to know who is making money when the market changes. Probably Trump-related companies, and Trump cronies get advance notice of these drastic market swings. Well, that would be against the law. You know, if he did that, and you know, I mean, we see Collins and others, Congressman Collins and others, getting into trouble for that kind of thing. But proving it and knowing it or suspecting it are two different things.
As we saw from the Mueller report.
Mm-hmm. And then we heard from John, who says, repercussions. What repercussions? There are no repercussions for Trump's actions. Trump has never, in capital letters, faced any repercussions for any of his actions, which is why he doesn't think he'll face any from his trade war.
You know, I wish I could disagree with that author. I mean, it's crazy. He can go one direction on Tuesday, mm-hmm. a different direction on Wednesday, and people say, oh, that's just Trump.
And then take credit for
both directions.
Take credit for both directions and then create the chaos and then come out the other end saying, look, I fixed it.
So Libby and group, why is it that he gets away with it? I think it comes down to the fact, I suspect, that he's just a bully.
I do, too.
And bullying has worked for him.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So John says, can Libby please describe how President Obama addressed the theft of IP and trade imbalances? While she knocks President Trump for being clueless, she fails to describe how Obama tackled this problem. I am only aware Obama did nothing. I mean nothing, said John, who writes to us quite frequently with this kind of a letter.
Well, I asked Jim to take this question on because he's the expert in all of that technology stuff.
So given a few hours, we could know. So one of the things to understand is that these things in this complex international system are not so simple. So you say, we always should protect IP. Well, okay, but then that means
intellectual
some
property.
Of our innovation.
Let's just be clear so everybody understands.
IP is intellectual property, patents, things like that. Yeah. So basically the Obama administration, and I must admit, I knew some of this stuff and some of the people, had five things they wanted to do when it came to technology. Government use of technology upgrade, what we call net neutrality, which we won't go into today because mm-hmm. I would get on a soapbox and
that would take
many
a whole
hours.
Day. Yeah.
stimulus spending on technology, because remember, he came in a recession and had to get mm-hmm. us out of it. Electronic medical records and a lot of work mm-hmm. in advanced manufacturing. Mm-hmm. So the one that really relates to this one has to do with that stimulus spending. So one of the things he was trying to do is get companies moving faster, get them rebuilding. And part of that meant opening the China market. So, yes, I think that deals were made. I think that if you took a completely isolationist, protectionist approach, you wouldn't have done some of the things Obama did. And I think we're out of the recession because he did the right things. And now you can ask the question, you know, should we go back to an isolationist IP, protect our IT? And by the way, a lot of our companies can't play in the biggest markets in the world, which are India and China. Or do we, you know, but at least Americans can buy American goods for twice the price.
Libby, you're a genius for having called on Jim.
Yeah, I know. I'm really good at this.
Well. But Libby,
delegate.
You want to talk to me about campaigns? I'll go all day long.
All right, one more letter and then we'll take a break.
Okay. So that took care of John.
All right.
And now we're going to Raymond, Ramon, to the panel. Very odd to hear those that are very comfortable with raising taxes to support government programs, but are somehow fearful of our anti-tariffs. All the timer fees is another form of tax that fills government's coffers. If anything goes added added tariffs will help fund the programs that those opposing Trump want the government to provide.
Huh. I'm not sure that's how that works.
Yeah, me neither.
But I think we would need an economics.
All right, we'll save it till Friday and bring Aaron in and
if he shows
let
up.
Him whack her out. Yeah.
Okay, he may have a banjo gig. Okay, so Ross of Greenfield says, if everyone working on Wall Street left their jobs and protested in... I love this letter. If everyone working on Wall Street left their jobs and protested in the streets together against Trump and his financial game of chicken with China and the rest of the world, that would be a huge statement.
That would be a big one-day loss.
That's right. But what if everybody who doesn't like Trump came out in the streets with a pot and a pan in just one day?
It still wouldn't throw him out.
We did it once.
We didn't even come. We didn't. We didn't even come close to it.
Nope.
I mean, we had a bunch of people show up one day and go home. But this business. If this happened, you know. Well, we're getting closer to the point where we better do something.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
You won't admit you love me, and so how am I ever to know? You always tell me, perhaps, perhaps, perhaps. A million times I've asked you, and then I ask you over again. You only answer, perhaps, perhaps, perhaps.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Jim Hendler, Sarah Rogerson, and Libby Post. And we'll move on to other topics, just hearing the music of Doris Day, who we learned passed away this morning at the age of 97. Let's talk about the there are some interesting in both Georgia and Alabama, there are abortion bills that are going on. And so... They're weird in the sense that they have a lot of language in them that is broad, let's say. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, one of the headlines of this article said, could miscarriages land women in jail? So that's how little there is known about of what could be in the legislation. Abortion legislation in Georgia and Alabama ascended in the news cycle this week with Georgia Governor signing a heartbeat bill into law on Tuesday and Alabama Senate postponing until next week its vote on a near-total abortion ban. The Georgia law will ban abortions after a doctor is able to detect a fetal heartbeat in the womb, usually at about 6 weeks, before many women know they're pregnant. It was one of the nation's most stringent proposals until the all-out ban introduced in Alabama. Under the proposed Alabama bill, doctors would not be able to perform the procedure once a fetus is in utero. That version caught national attention because the bill that passed the House allowed for a single exception in cases involving a serious health risk to the unborn child's mother. Cases of rape and incest were not exempt as they are in other states. The abortion bills are not simple. In Georgia, you have to go down a rabbit hole and have to be a lawyer to understand what you're reading, according to Bonyan Lee Gilmore, director of Planned Parenthood state media campaigns. Since Tuesday, fear has spread, confusing further reporting on the bills. Information has been misconstrued, criminal penalties have been misstated, and social media platforms have morphed into prime false narrative territory. And while there has been much attention on the issue of bans on early stage abortions, women who miscarry are not going to be sent to prison for life.
Well, that's a relief.
Yeah, really.
Yeah. So, I mean, this.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, generous man, who made
this bill,
Alabama.
Right.
So, abortion, but let's note right now, in these states, abortion is not outlawed right now.
Well, no. This Roe v. Wade is still the law of the land. What these folks have done, what the anti-abortion people have consistently done, is try to chip away at Roe v. Wade in a way that undermines it. You know, first it was parental consent. Now it's fetal heartbeat. And there's all lots of stuff that's come in between. It's not like it's only parental consent and fetal heartbeat. But this really is about, and I think this guy Collins from, I think it's Alabama, said it quite clearly. He wants to get rid of Roe v. Wade. And these bills are geared to get up to the Supreme Court. And, you know, what I found really interesting in reading this article, it talked about a legal concept. I can't remember what the Greek is for it, but it was a legal concept that was settled law, right?
Yes, that's judicata. All,
right. That's yeah. all we kept hearing in the Supreme Court hearings. Roe v. Wade is a matter of settled law, which is really Republican code for now. Mm. It's settled law for now, and we'll do everything we can to overturn it by stacking the court. You know, abortion is not going to go away in this country. All that will happen is it'll be more backstreet alley abortions like it was in the 40s and the 50s and the 60s before Roe v. Wade was implemented. This notion that, oh, a pregnancy, and I've read this from the right, a pregnancy out of a rape is a blessing from God. I mean, it's this notion that women are there just to have children, just to be the carriers of semen and populate the earth. I know that some folks might say I'm sounding crazy, but the fact is that that's how a lot of people in the radical Christian right feel, and they do not feel that women should have the right to make this decision and control their own bodies.
Well, I think there's another strain in there of people on the right who have this sanctity of life concern when it comes to unborn children.
Great. And why don't they care about them once they're out of the womb? That's
you,
the
Libby.
Hypocrisy here. You know, most of these women who are poor end up having multiple children. They go on social services. These are the same folks who want to cut those social services. These are the same folks who rip children out of the hands of their mothers at the border.
So to me, there's two issues here. And one is obviously the very important issue of these abortion laws being changed in these two states. The other issue is the subtext here is the miscommunication,
mm-hmm. yeah.
and what is being said and what is not being understood, and the various tactics that both sides are using to get their message out, and it leaves people scared, mm-hmm. Scare tactics on different sides. And so how do you deal with that?
Well, I mean, you deal with the scare tactics just like you deal with this notion of fake news. You try to educate people as much as you can about what's real and what's not.
Well, and I think part of the problem is it's not all intentional either. It's people who don't know about reproductive rights making laws about reproductive rights. Of course, it's confusing because they don't know. I would love to sit in a room of male lawmakers, and I'm not saying all of them are clueless, but to hear them try to hash out, you know, what happens at 6 weeks, what happens at 12 weeks. I mean, I guess you could Google it, but that's not how you make law, right?
No.
Consulting with medical professionals and OBGYNs and maternal health care providers, that's the smart
but
way to
they
make
don't,
these laws.
They don't believe in science. They don't want to take science into account. They don't want to hear from experts. They just want to be able to legislate on their bias around women and what they think their role, our role in society is. And, you know, there's a picture that's been circulating of the first major administrative meeting on women's health care, and it was all white men, you know, and there weren't any doctors in the room, and there weren't any women in the room. They don't really want to hear from women. They just want to tell us what to do. They just want to tell us what we can do with our bodies. And, you know, this is very simple from my perspective. No one has the right to tell a woman whether or not to bear children except for that woman making that decision.
And
period,
nobody has the right to tell a medical professional what's in their best best judgment. There's a whole professional system set up for medical doctors and how they're supposed to make these types of life and death decisions that have nothing to do with the government.
And nor should it.
And in terms of the information, Joe, your original question, I think there are campaigns on both sides, as you said, putting out facts. In a lot of cases, the facts are true. It's just the emotional manipulation of the facts. So I don't have an answer for that. It's an emotionally charged issue. People feel very strongly about it, have always in this country, and we've struggled with it, and we're not alone.
No.
Anybody else? All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
Everybody loves a lover. I'm a lover. Everybody loves me. Anyhow, that's how I feel. Wow, I feel just like a Pollyanna. I should worry, not for nothing. Everybody loves me. Yes, they do. Since I fell in love with you, who's the most popular?
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to the panel discussion this morning. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Jim Henwer, Sarah Rogerson, and Libby Post making up the group. We're playing Doris Day this morning because she passed away at the age of 97. We learned that news just before we went on the air. We have letters. We'll get to those. Just a reminder, the lockbox is open and needing you, WAMC.org. But it is open.
It is not only open, it's where we live. You know, the day that it doesn't happen, the day that people say, let somebody else do it, and we all know this because you've been there every time and we're counting on you now. So if everybody were just to move to the telephone and 1-800-323-9262 and say, yeah, okay, this is too valuable for me to fool with. And so I'll do my little part. I'll do either a little part or a bigger part. But whatever you do, if you walk away, this too can disappear. I was just thinking about a Chinese restaurant that I loved, you know, that people stopped coming to. Now it's in danger.
All right.
Yeah.
WAMC.org?
Yeah. Ellen says, abortion is a felony. If it becomes a felony to have an abortion, you cannot vote if you have committed a felony. It's another way to take rights from women. That's from Ellen.
In some states. And there's a big move underway to fix that for a lot of different reasons, but it's a good point.
Harrison in North Adams writes, Libby makes it sound like abortion issue is male versus female thing. The most hardcore anti-abortionists I know are very religious Catholic women.
I think there's a difference between those who are pushing the advocacy and those who are making the decisions on in terms of like writing the laws. And I think what Libby's point was is that it's mainly men who are actually crafting the laws that are informing this conversation.
I don't think
this
there's
is
any
true,
question.
But I actually think that this is where things get confusing because, again, somebody has to elect those guys, and they're being elected in states where women are voting for them. And, you know, part of it is because you have one group of people where abortion is the only issue they care about, and a lot of other people who care about a lot of other things, too. But, you know, I think it's definitely the case that the swing votes on this are these very conservative women, and for whatever reason, that's where they stand, and either must be educated or we're going to be facing this for a long time to
come. What you say is true, Jim. However, there's another side to it, and that is I truly believe it is men versus women. I truly believe it is men who are trying to make decisions about women's bodies. End of discussion.
It's true.
Yeah.
And there's also, I mean, there are men who are voting for these other men. Too.
Yeah, there are plenty of men who are voting for these other men.
And I'm not willing to scapegoat conservative women because they have other conservative beliefs. I'm sure there are a number of conservative women that feel conflicted about the issue but vote conservative men into office for a host of other reasons.
But that was the point I'm making. So in other words, that you have this one set who are voting on just this issue. Gun rights is another one.
Right, so, and gay rights is another
one. Gay rights is another one, where you have these very strong people voting on a particular issue and everything else kind and become secondary, and then you have other people in the middle. But I think that, you know, abortion was the issue that created the modern right to a very large degree, and I think it's very scary seeing what happens. But I mean, it's very likely we're going to go back to a state-by-state kind of ruling on this for a while if the
no doubt
for sure. And if you look at Missouri and Illinois, you have, you know, two states that are going in complete opposite directions, and what's happening? The women who can't access abortion in one state are heading to the other one.
I think that's going to happen a lot. I think you're going to see a lot of people coming to New York. Because New York is now, abortion is now protected in New York.
And finally out of the criminal code.
That's right, and out of the criminal code in the health plan where it belongs.
Although, you know, it'll happen. Right.
On the other hand, let's remember that to get on a plane is no simple thing.
This
and
is
it's going to cost several
true.
Hundred dollars, which most people who, not most people, but some people who have, you know, need an abortion will not be able to afford.
That's right.
It's that simple. And we heard from Joanne, who says, thank you, Libby. Fact, late-term abortion is what people tragically have to choose when their child is deformed in some way. It is not a routine procedure. And that's Joanne in Woodstock.
And it hardly ever happens. Let's be really clear about that.
Yeah.
Late-term abortion is not something that happens very often, and it's not something that a woman cavalierly makes a decision on. That's a pregnancy that is in danger, and something's wrong with the fetus, or there's a threat to the mother's health, and that woman makes that decision with her doctor. This is not something like, I just woke up and I'm 7 months pregnant. And I don't want to have this child. That's not the case here. And that's how the right makes it seem.
So Neil writes us about abortion rights. Another issue regarding the anti-choice push to overturn Roe v. Wade is the separation of church and state. The anti-choice movement originates in and is justified by the conservative Christian view of women and the idea that the soul appears at the moment of conception. It is part of the movement to force all of us to understand their concept of morality.
Well, and that's the scarier thing than the late-term abortion issue, actually, is personhood, viability,
right.
and these earlier-term decisions.
Jeannie says, lowest abortion rates. The lowest abortion rates in the world is in the Netherlands. They have the comprehensive sex education, free birth control, and abortion on demand. These laws by the GOP aren't really about abortion. They're about misogynist idea of how the world should be.
So let me answer, because I think Sarah had it right. I mean, it's really, it's not a... I think misogyny is a side effect as opposed to the primary effect, right? The real effect is exactly, it's this particular religious view and the belief that everyone should share your religious view because it's correct, and we're just going to do it. And I think that's the, you know, I mean, again, it comes from a very particular...
I don't know if we need to argue view. The chicken or the egg.
Yeah, it's
here.
True.
Because misogyny has been around for a very
that's
long
fair,
time.
That's fair, that's fair.
And misogyny fair. Is the basis for some of these far-right religious beliefs.
I was
well,
really...
I won't disagree with that, Libby, yeah. But I'll say again, but those voting blocks we were just talking about, this is part of what makes it so tough for them, because they're voting on an entire ethical stance. But a lot of it is trying to impose, whether you believe in being allowed to impose your ethical stance on others mm-hmm. or not, and there's always very hard questions in that.
I was very sad last weekend when Rachel Held Evans passed away, and she was a former evangelical writer who began writing. I read one of her most recent books called Inspired, and she very carefully traces the misogyny that's rooted in our religious text. And dissects that, and how are we supposed to look at that today? And we're, there just aren't enough voices like hers being heard right now.
And John writes, abortion. Good morning, panel. I hear your panel talking about challenges to Roe v. Wade being the result of male desire to control women's bodies. But from where I'm standing, the desire for a legalized abortion comes from the belief that women should not be required to be responsible for their own actions, except, of course, in the case of rape or other complications. All right, let's go to Alex. Abortion bills. These crazy abortion bills are clearly a ploy to get abortion to the Supreme Court in an effort to repeal Roe v. Wade. And that's Alex from St. Johnsville. Do you think?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Very much so.
Sure. And we were having an interesting discussion.
I think the speed at which it hits the courts is going to be very interesting.
Well, it's going to
very much between before 2020 and after 2020 will have a huge impact.
It is going to come up to the Supreme Court. And it is going to be an interesting study because John Roberts, the Chief Justice, has already showed us that he does not want to put that court in this uber-right thing where they always vote no matter whether it's good public policy or not.
I don't think he wants history to remember that it was the Roberts Court
I think
that
you're
overturned Roe v. Wade.
Well, whatever the motivation.
Well,
he's been
a big fan. He's really big on stare decisis. He really
And that's good. That's a very good point. You know, you go with what you have. On the other hand, Gorsuch, the first Trump appointee, turns out to be really doctrinaire, and with Clarence Thomas and the other guys. But Kavanaugh, who everybody went after with, he turns out...
For good reason.
Yeah.
Well,
for whatever ruling.
For whatever reason, Kavanaugh might be the decisive vote that protects Roe v. Wade.
I think it's going to be Roberts.
Libby, you're right. It is Kavanaugh who has shown a predisposition to go with Roberts.
Right.
Okay.
There's a great article in the New York Times today about that, about the difference between Gorsuch and Kavanaugh.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens.
I didn't think it up for myself.
we'll see.
There it was. Okay.
We'll wait with bated breath.
So Julius, who writes us frequently, if you think the Alabama bill against women's control of their own bodies is bad, take a look at the Ohio efforts to eliminate even contraception.
It's true.
Anna says, abortion, why are you not dealing with the male responsibility for the fetus? Why not make the male donor and family pay for 21 years of support? Failing the male, then the state taxpayer pays. Abortion would be legal then. And that's from Anna.
Well, if men could get pregnant,
things would be very different.
Very, very. I used to have a bumper sticker that said if men could get pregnant, abortion would be a sacrament.
Yep.
I mean, it was, and then somebody spray painted it. But you know, the fact is if a man could get pregnant, abortion would be legal.
Well,
and it does take two to tango in this whole equation.
We do have a system.
The history that creates.
I mean, men have to be held responsible for this as
this
well.
Is true.
The
family court system is supposed to do that. Yeah. You know, you're supposed to be able to seek child support for 21 years.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be a system that's set up on fairness, but it doesn't work that way.
No, it doesn't.
And when you're talking about poverty, it just further criminalizes poor fathers in some cases. So it doesn't do what it was set up to do.
Anonymous writes us. Wonder why it's anonymous on abortion. How about an equal punishment for men who impregnate women?
And what would that be?
Yeah, I was just thinking, what exactly would that be?
Oh, vasectomies for everyone.
And then we heard from Chris with a modest proposal. If a woman is going to be forced to carry a fetus, then she should also be given the right to choose which parent gets sole custody once the child is born.
Really?
A little different.
There's a lot of family law concepts that are wrapped up in there.
Yes.
And including surrogacy and adoption and same-sex parents and all kinds of issues there. There's an entire semester that you could take on these types of issues.
I do want to say really quickly to remind everybody about the lockbox being open this morning. Unfortunately, it's not going well. The phones are not ringing the way they have to if we're going to save this station. And it really does come down to everybody. I mean, every phone should be ringing. You could do your share. You could make it happen. 1-800-323-9262. 1-800-323-9262. Got to be honest with you. We really need you now.
WAMC.org. We would love to, we need to hear from you as soon as possible. All right. Let's do a couple of items here. Jim came in earlier and said, let me get this right. Our stories today are that Biden didn't say anything stupid and Trump did. And that's the news. There you go.
Ta-da.
So in the New York Times have an article that's called "There He Goes Again?" Not yet, as Biden avoids major gaffe. So he's been in the race for a week. He hasn't made a screw up. And that's a headline in the paper in the New York Times.
As opposed to the president of the United States, who certainly never says anything that's inappropriate.
Well, that's right. But that's
opposed to every other Democratic candidate, every other woman candidate who's out there busting their hump. Getting Elizabeth Warren has issued policy after policy after she's like on a roll week after week, and all we hear is Biden didn't screw up yet. I thought that Alan just added that story on to get me riled up.
No,
you did it.
Yeah, I did it. I did it. Well, I just because well, not it
what?
Wasn't it wasn't had anything to do with riling you up. It just seems silly to me because I don't. It's like he's only been in for a week.
Yeah.
And he hasn't screwed up yet. And that's a story. That's a story. And the other thing, the other part of that too is that. I guess it's because he is far away in the polls. The latest poll has him at 47% or whatever amongst Democrats. And
bananas.
Well, I'm sorry.
It's just bananas.
So I guess it's contrary to what the pre-announcement and sort of the screw-ups that were done there. And I guess that adds to it. But are we going to be getting I'm wondering next Monday, is there going to be another article? Well, he did another one. He got it through another week.
Yeah. Or if he does make a small mistake or a small error, look, I love the New York Times. It's been something that I have depended on for years and years, but they are capable of doing stupid things. And this was a stupid article.
It's what the people want to hear about. 47% are following his every move. That's the only thing they have to write about.
Yeah, but Sarah.
That's on him.
Sarah, that doesn't mean that they want him to make a mistake. or that they're waiting for him to make a
no,
mistake.
No, I agree.
And here is this despicable human being who is president of the United States, who says the worst trash in the world, and they're talking about what Biden didn't say. Look, I'm telling you now, I've told you before, who the presidential candidate is going to be. It's going to be Biden, and Kamala Harris is going to be the and she should be. She's terrific.
All right.
I had a great idea. I know it's not possible, but I think Biden should get Michelle Obama as his running mate.
Well,
for the simple reason that then I don't have to throw out all my Obama Biden T-shirts, all my Biden bumper stickers.
Yeah, well,
you don't have to throw them out anyway.
If it were the other way around, you wouldn't have even have to change the billing.
Right.
Is that what we're going for, guys? This is all very low bar stuff. I don't want to have to make new T-shirts. Right. I don't want to.
The gaffe issue with Biden is a real issue, and it's something that he has created for himself. So, yeah, the media is going to cover that. The lack of coverage for the women candidates is very problematic.
And Cory Booker released one of the most progressive gun reform platforms that we've ever seen. That's a top issue for voters.
It's about
crickets.
I know it's crickets, but it's when you talk.
But would it be crickets if he was more than 3% in the polls?
That's it. Well, you've got the news media is going to respond to that.
Like, why? Why does he get to walk in with that?
Well, because he has name recognition and he's the vice for
Vice president for 8 years, and people do love him.
Okay, so if Biden becomes the candidate and he messes up, okay, you report that he messed up, but you don't say. But he didn't mess up, and that's the news.
Yeah, and I want to just read this. You have a friend next door there, Alan. But it is early yet, which even Mr. Biden's friends allow as they hold their breath, and precedent offers good reason to question whether his streak of mostly error-free days can last. But his staff has sought to mitigate the risk by effectively recreating the trappings of the vice presidency, guarding question and answer sessions, selecting safe interview settings, and remaining all but glued to his hip when he greets voters on rope lines.
And that's in the Times?
Dips into ice cream shops and steps out of the black Chevy Suburbans that are indistinguishable from the Secret Service models that he once
rode. Sound like they don't want him to be the candidate?
No, there actually is a line further down in there, though, that I thought was meaningful, which is says he's never been a front runner before.
Right. Never.
That's true.
Right? So in the fact, he's always been kind of more the loose cannon trying to come up and find a way in. And so it should be very interesting to see this difference in the handling and the trying to protect turf and things like that.
If only we had presidential candidates on the Democratic side that didn't need that kind of handling, that could handle their own, that had poise, that were composed, that were...
Every candidate, even Obama, had a few gaffes. I mean, every candidate.
Yeah, but you're not waiting for him and you're not making news out of the fact that you don't have them.
Right, And I think it should be pointed out that the news media is doing its very best, other than Fox, pointing out the insanity of this presidency. And the fact that they've, revoked everybody's press credentials now is just going to ratchet it up even more.
All right. We're out of time. My thanks to everybody. We welcome, don't forget the lockbox, WAMC.org, 1-800-323-9262. We'll be right back.